We can't hear you, Sheila.
I'm not speaking. Can you hear me now?
Yes.
I find that it's helpful to speak, to listen if you want to hear that. Okay, so we are in Parshat Noah, Noah. And let's see. Here we go. So, let me think. So, Shviti Shechina Lenegdi Tamid. I place the Shechina, the embodied divine dwelling place, before me at all times. Negdi is literally against me, as in perhaps a massive divine hug. I place the divine as close to me as it can be in this breath, in the settled or unsettled body. With the arising and disappearing of mental formations and physical sensations, all of which is happening tamid, always, whether I'm awake to them or not. To place the Shekhinah, the divine presence, before me at all times. Let's see, what do I want to say here? So this effort to show up and be present exposes our frailty. And we live in, seems to me that we're living in especially wrenching times in our lives, in our nation, in current nail-biting election. And sometimes it sends, feels like it's an epic good versus an epic evil. And the ongoing frightening of what's happening, fright of what's happening in Israel and Palestine. So this is the parsha of the Mabul, the flood. And this past year has indeed felt like a Mabul, a flood, capable of destroying so much life and goodness. And it floods us. And it brings these teachings of Torah alive in our bodies, hearts, and minds. So here we are in the week of Parshat Noach, and we ask, how does Noah rescue the scattered remnants of God's attempt at creation? Noah is the one who has to save a remnant of life when God's wrath is a literal tsunami. In the midst of catastrophe, Noah must take drastic action in order to save this experiment in creation of human life on this planet. Many years ago, I heard a teaching on Noah that I think came through Reb Natan Margalit, a member of TBZ, based in part on teachings by Reb Miles Krassen, who I studied with one summer at Eilat Chaim, and who coined the phrase for the then new Jewish renewal movement in the Hudson River Valley by starting his talks saying, "Welcome to the Center for Planetary Judaism, Judaism," and then, with a mischievous smile, corrected himself, "But I shouldn't say the Center for Planetary Judaism, I should say a center for planetary Judaism, from my center to your center." So Torah, Genesis 6, verse 9 begins, "Ele ha-toldot Noach," usually translated as, "These are the generations of Noah." But Reb Nachman interprets it literally, "These are the birthings of Noah." Noach ish tzaddik. Noah is a tzaddik, a righteous person. Reb Nachman says Noah represents the birthing of the tzaddik in the mythical history of Torah. Noah is an archetype of a tzaddik, one who repairs the world. one who is about giving birth to what's needed in this world. So in each of our meditation sits, together or apart, to each of you tzaddikim, there's a sense of continued birthing. Every tzaddik is a tzaddik in training. Every tzaddik is being born and is giving birth to something that will manifest in the future. And giving birth, as some of us experience, is one of the hardest things to do, especially that firstborn. Birth pangs are tough. It's difficult, but worth it to push out new life. Birthings of the tzaddik is a birth of a certain kind of wisdom that we each must learn, regardless of being an actual mother or not. And in this past year has dared us over and over again to create space for love and goodness amidst the mabul, the floods of war and election madness, and all our personal things going on. One way I've taken action is to support the efforts of over a dozen coexistence groups in with Palestinians and Israelis who work together for peace. And I find that in my meditation practice, whether in the depths of retreat or sitting with you week after week at Nishmat Chaim year after year, that each time we meet, there's a sense of birthing. Whether uncovering aspects of self or others or world, there is a more intimate connection with the force that binds us to each other and to life on the planet. A world that is asking for healing, asking for compassion, starting with our own body, mind, heart. Which is not so easy given our own fears, disappointments, aversions, desires. The source of all says to Noah, Ketz kol basar. This is the end of all existence, of all flesh. Is God catastrophizing? The Torah articulates a feeling that we try to suppress or to desperately fix. It's a canny expression of how we catastrophize these times on earth. With seeming endless war, degradation of the environment, and dread consequences of the election. So, in this passage, God herself catastrophizes. Nothing is good, and we must all start over, destroy all flesh. So, yes. Our practice at its very core is about starting over again and again and again. Meditation is a practice of starting over again. And after all these years, it still amazes me how much my mind drifts here and there. And then when I awake back into the present moment, instead of giving myself a hearty mazel tov for awakening, for returning, it chastises me on my incompetence as a committed meditator. So, okay, this is our path to reset, to return to the ephemeral breath of life. Returning to that which never stays put for as long as we are alive. In an unknowable number of years that will be given. And the body is always faithful, patiently waiting for the mind to come back, to return to this breath, for all to find Noach. Noach's name means rest, comfort. To be held in the ark of this body, in the ark of this community, in the ark of this world. The solar system, to be held in precious Dharma friendships, this bustling prayer community that is Nishmat Chaim and TBZ and all beings everywhere. Perhaps the most crucial aspect of the Torah's description of the Ark is that there is a Tzoar, and the Tzoar is a window, a protected place, where we watch chaos surround us from a safe vantage place. A place that demarcates a certain sense of protection amidst everything that's beyond our control, which is mostly everything. And our practice cultivates a stillness out from which we can look at chaos in a safe way. Our Tzoar is our sit, our sitting together. Our Tzoar helps us face whatever the chaos sends our way. We remain still amidst the uncontrollable wild mind and wild weather that is taking our ark to God knows where. On each awakening from the wandering mind, we are suddenly brought home to a deeper sense of the state of the heart, body, mind. We sit in the midst of a storm of longing or pushing away or trying to gain some control in an incomprehensible universe. And our practice is to cradle each sensation or thought with curiosity, with kindness, with welcome. Fear is like this right now, longing like this, confusion like this. And we tenderly monitor the soul lifting and the soul crushing, welcoming all of it to be held in loving curiosity, with all its unbearability and its vast, vast love. Kindness and tenderness can't erase the fears, but lets us envelop them in what the Kwannon school of Zen calls don't know mind. I like to say the phrase, don't know, don't know. One could say that don't know mind sits at the depths of our meditation and the story of Noach. Another apt Zen phrase that I love that touches these depths is that not knowing is most intimate. Not knowing is most intimate. When we come together each Friday morning, we build an ark. We sit together in waters that may be violent or calm, connected or disconnected. We sit with fear. We sit with boredom, with hope, with joy, as we watch each thing arise into consciousness and disappear. We breathe loving welcome to all that arises. And the stories that bind us tight become more spacious, more forgiving. Then, perhaps most importantly, there must be a tzoar in our ark, a window, a way of looking out at the indecipherable chaos in these turbulent times and of all times. How do we survive the confrontation with what the Torah says is the, quote, end of all existence? Could it be that in every moment, as we breathe out, on the out-breath there's an ending, and that little space between the end of the out-breath and the in-breath, or vice versa, at the end of the in-breath to the out-breath, we enter into a space without words. We enter the don't know mind. So, the end of all times is certainly a description of my own fears, whether for the existence of Israel or for the destruction of Gaza, for the climate crisis and the upcoming election. You don't need to be a historian to testify that in every time and place, there has been a sense of impending calamity, of the end of all times. We humans and all life are intrinsically vulnerable. So much of what we do is an attempt to hide this vulnerability by mastering our jobs, mastering our relationships, and mastering our meditation to counter this vulnerability. Anything that we obscure, then that will obscure our most intimate reality of not knowing, of don't know mind. In our time, there are so many organizations and movements that are inspirationally part of building this generation's arc. There's a double entendre, bend the arc, which was Martin Luther King's intention to bend the arc towards justice. And now we have Noah's Ark that is part of that process, that gathering, that ingathering of souls together. To live this unknowable life together. And the word mabul, flood, is the same as the root bilbul, confusion. We are living in a time when we can get easily overwhelmed by confusion. How does birth conquer death? How will life survive the ultimate challenge? How do we stay afloat through the flood of destruction? Whether in our individual experience or our socio-political, local, and global realities. You could say that our practice asks us to practice compassion. And in the story of Noah, the Torah teaches that we have to turn this life and these lives into the ark of community. Reb Nachman says the ark means word. The ark means word. And asks what kind of words can be spoken that become an ark, a vehicle through a sea of confusion and fear and longing. But we know that silence can become an ark. We practice together. And we're always practicing together, whether we're physically together or not. We build an ark that accompanies us, that guides us, and holds us through the torrent of life. Torah tells us that the ark has kinim, compartments, different rooms. So the vehicle needs to have complexity to accommodate all kinds of energies. In our practice, we seek an open-hearted, open-minded silence. We make room for all kinds of complexities of energies, joy, sadness, calm, restlessness, anger, fear, tenderness, disappointment. And of course, joyful connection with these precious bodies surrounding us, even on Zoom. We can include not only our confusion, but our intrinsic loneliness, as we are each the only creature exactly like us in the entire cosmos, across all time and space, as far as we know. How can we not be shaken to our core? But here, together, we make time and space to create an arc through silence. We watch the sea of confusion arise, immersing us in a flood of words, worries, longings, and unexpected joys. We can't stop the flood, but neither do we have to drown in it. The Torah teaches us how not to drown, how to hold up each other. Zohar, ta'aseh b'teva, Make a tohar in your ark. Rashi says tzohar means a window or a shining light-bearing jewel. So in our silence and in the flood of words and conceptions in this life, our tzohar can be mindfulness, just sitting, just knowing this moment as it is, whether mind wandering or still. We return to the tzohar of breath, of breathing, the literal opening in which we exchange oxygen and CO2 with all kinds of living organisms and creatures. Reb Nachman said we must learn to speak words that are themselves a tzohar, that have a jewel-like quality and that shines or are windows of light. Words that are powerful enough to take us through the mabul, the flood of confusion. This is what Reb Nachman calls being hooked up to the prophetic source. Then, words become a union of heaven and of earth, a union between the sense of a separate self and the interconnection of all there is. Words of prayer are supposed to be a union of heaven and earth. And so that is our practice, which is to say, that is our lives. Dr. Aviva Zornberg calls Noah a second Adam. Adam sees a new world, but remembers the old. He has a sense of the choices that have gone into making his evolving identity. God's newfound tolerance may be a function of just this new self-awareness of the human. For if it is emotional stupidity to treat this world as an udder, it is at the same time an essential phase of human growth. Good old Winnicott writes of the illusion of the infant that he creates. And that he creates, that the infant creates and controls the breast, the illusory omnipotence of the small being who has just emerged from a dungeon and imagines himself king. If only the infant had been given sufficient opportunity, oh, only, this is my last line, only if the infant has been given sufficient opportunity for illusion. Can she be successfully disillusioned? And I'll stop there amidst my more mabul of words that could be said. So let's take a moment of silence and then open it to our collective thoughts.